Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
Hope you guys are well, as always, and I mean that. Hope you guys are well. Life's short. Take a deep breath and enjoy what you have and be grateful for what you have. That's what I try to do. Just life is precious and beautiful. Don't take it too seriously. Anyway, we're going to get into this podcast, but before we do, I just might say that this might be one of the better podcasts I've ever done on leash reactivity. Sometimes I'm just on a groove, and I think this is well executed, and I say things in this podcast that I have never said before that really resonate with the dog owners. It also felt good for me. So I know you guys are going to enjoy this. If you're having problems with your dog, I know that this is going to give you perspective and help, confidence and motivation and inspiration. I appreciate you guys so much for listening and supporting me. You guys are helping me live my dreams of being a professional dog trainer and traveling the world. And so I appreciate you so much for helping me do that. If you want me to answer your questions, it's my only way of giving back here in the podcast. You have a question for me? Yeah, you listening? Head over to the iTunes review chart and leave a review. And in your review, you can ask your question and I'll answer it on the next podcast. I'm also going to be answering three of your dog training questions at the end of this podcast. So make sure you listen to the end for more dog training tips and advice. And also, I'm coming to the UK next month. I'm very excited to get over there to hang out with you guys for the weekend and help people and change their life with their dog. A link in the description below for all the details and ticket information. I can't wait to come back over and hang out with you guys. Sincerely, my friend Will Atherton is going to be over there hanging out, asking questions and help me out with the seminar. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Enjoy the podcast, guys. What's going on?
Okay, so we have a dog. How old is Bear, Tim?
He's five.
Five-year-old dog, rescue dog. What escalated us, like, we need help now, is he bit a neighbor 2 weeks ago. And we're like, we need help. So background about Bear is that he is always just been really territorial around our house. It's absolutely fine with our family of four. We have two older teens, and is sweet and very mild around us, kind of goofy, nurturing, but is barks incessantly and lunges when anyone comes, like, in our yard, and can sometimes exhibit that same behavior, like when he's out on a walk. He is absolutely fine. We could take him to daycare. He's fine there. They never had a problem with him. But when we literally have been navigating since we've had him, like, we just don't have people over. We take him to boarding if we're going to have house guests. Cause he's just, nothing we've tried has worked with him. People say, like, we've had a couple trainers say, like, oh, just train him to go to a separate room. He just, nothing's worked. We haven't been successful at all with that. So we've just dealt with him, not having people over in our house. We were like, we need help.
Yeah, that makes sense. So right now the biggest problem is when you have people over. I mean, he goes to daycare, so he's good with dogs. He's good with people, but when people come to the house, that's a big thing.
I don't know if you'd say he's good with other people. It's just we kind of stay away from other people. Like, he has a couple people that have dogs in our neighborhood. When my husband works from home, takes them for walks. Mm. He's okay. with like the lady who has treats. Like he sits up and does great there, but we just try to pull him away from other people and dogs when he's out in free range.
Right.
I don't know why daycare has always been fine. It's been a puzzle to us, but it's, you know, it's indoors and it's leash free, and I don't know. We looked at some of your videos, and it sounds like maybe dog people are looking at triggers that we don't actually see that might set him off.
Yeah, and also too, it's about you guys also not being there. That's a huge part of it. I would say. Oh, okay. 7 times out of 10, when a dog is reactive towards people or aggressive, it's because of what's hanging onto the leash. And 70% of the time, once the owners are out of the picture, it never happens. So,
really?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's something that people don't even exactly. That's the reaction we typically get when we talk about that, because, you know, dog owners start talking through their problems or their concerns, or their, you know, things they want to work on with their dog. And they're like, you know, it doesn't make any sense. We bring him to, you know, another place and he's fine there. And obviously there's people that work there, there's humans there. So, sometimes if the owners aren't around, then the problem doesn't exist because the owners are the reason why the dog is reacting aggressively in the first place. And so once
once he comes into the lobby at the daycare, then he's pretty reactive, you know, when he sees us.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that
so
makes
it's
sense.
It's a very, very, very binary switch. So if you're around, there's a problem. If you're not around, there's no problem. So as a dog professional, my goal, especially with behavior, is to try to isolate the trigger and the problem. And so this is a very, you know, clear issue of you guys being the problem, because the only time that he acts the way that you don't like or acts the way that is, you know, bad is when you're around. So just something to, you know, think about.
That kind of shifts how we were thinking of it. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably not going to shift too much of like, it's not going to change anything as far as like, okay, well, it's still there. So what do we do? And, you know, whatever, but at least, you know, oh, okay, that's weird. Cause just to give you perspective, dogs that come in that have leash reactivity or threshold or barrier reactivity. So cars, people come into the house, people walking by, people knocking on the door, things like that. If they're reactive, and then you remove them from the scenario. So you take them out of the car, you move them out of the house, you take the leash away from the owner and they don't do it, then that's the variable. Like that's the reason why it's happening. So what kind of dog is he? Do you see? I know he's 5, but what is he?
He's a rescue. So he's a mix. So he looks like a really short lab.
Okay.
Are the vet thinks he might have, they did that like DNA test, you know, one of his litter mates, and they said it was partially dachshund and partially lab. Our vet thinks he has some chow in him, which he said is not good.
Okay.
He has a really long snout, and his bite is like it's a harsh bark and a harsh, like, he has a big like chomp. It scares us. Yeah. And so we're like, we need help now.
Yep. So can you explain to me what happened with the neighbor?
She came to the door to deliver something to us,
okay.
And I had him in my left hand, and then I reached for, you know, while trying to manage the door, and I must have let my left hand get a little too close to the action, so he leapt up and got her hand as she was trying to give me, you know, something on the doorstep. Yeah.
Yeah. So... yeah. And so you have two different things coming into the picture. Is you have your house, which is it's like their big crate. It's like their home. So they're going to be more protective. That doesn't warrant a bite, though. That doesn't warrant aggression. It just warrants maybe alert barking. Like if somebody knocked on my door with my very trained dog, I'm not going to expect her not to react. I just would be able to de-escalate the situation within seconds to say, okay, thanks. Who's here? Okay, go lay down. So, but when you're dealing with the house stuff, ding dong, knock, 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 somebody's here, you're going to get that stimulation. So the dog's going to be like, whoa, 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 somebody's here. So that it's kind of building up. It pressure cooks. And then when you reach over, and again, none of these things are appropriate or warranted. I'm not trying to say that they are. But when you reach over to grab something from your neighbor, that's where the dog might then feel protective even more, or in some cases, like, get out of here, there's danger. So they'll try to, you know, nip the person or bite the person to get him away. And with dog behavior in general, there's a significant difference between a dog correcting somebody, nipping somebody, attacking somebody. You know, there's significant differences between the puncture wounds and how they do it and their behavior. And a lot of times in these cases, the dog is actually just trying to scare the person away. They're not trying to attack, unless they would have. They're not trying to break bones, unless they would have. It's just one of these things that they're like, hey, get out. It's like a bee stinging somebody going to their nest. They know they can't kill you. They're not trying to kill you. They're just trying to get you away from the honey or the bee.
Yeah. The only other, I mean, we've worked with some trainers before, but no, we haven't, they haven't helped. We haven't figured it out yet. But one thing that Bear in the past had aggression around was his food. And the trainers did help us successfully. There's no food aggression anymore. Like, so we were able to make a lot of movement with that. Like, we're in charge of the food. He has a sit, do whatever we say before we give him the food. He'll just sit there and wait. Prior to like us kind of like doing that with him, he would like try to snatch his food, a little bit of aggression. And so we were so hopeful, but we just haven't had any movement. He's almost getting worse, I would say, or maybe we're just getting more paranoid. With this, inappropriate reactivity and aggression related to us in the house.
And when you say related to you, what does that mean?
Like, when we're walking, Bear, like on our trail behind our house, like if someone comes over to like talk to us, he just goes bonkers.
Okay. Yeah. Understood. So when you're out,
Tim, would you agree with that, Tim? Cause Tim walks them more than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It will depend if the other person has a dog that he can get to know. Sometimes that's okay. So it just depends, I guess, on that. But if it's just a person without a dog, yeah, 9 times out of 10, he's not gonna like that. He's gotten to know a couple of neighbors that also have a dog down the way, and he's okay with them now. But he's gotten to know that they're okay, I guess.
Yeah. So the people that he gets to know, he's okay with, but the people that he doesn't know, with or without a dog, he's going to be reactive towards.
But it's like off the charts reactive, like super barking. Like we walk off the trail with him, like towards the trees. I'm sure I'd have tons of mosquito bites from this because we just don't want him anywhere near the trail. Cause he it's not like a little bit of barking. It's like, rawr!
Yeah. Okay. So the next question is what do you guys do when that happens? You're out for a walk. Somebody walks up to ask you a question. He reacts. What do you guys do?
We're trying to, maybe it's bad. We've tried to be very preventative of it. So like I see a dog coming or a person coming, we go way off the trail. And so, what I've tried a little bit more is I kind of like hold his face, like, Bear, you're okay. You're fine. And we've gotten to where he can like look at the person, and not like bark like crazy. Sometimes he just like, he's just like, it's almost like he's like, feels like they're going to attack him the way he responds. It's just really bizarre.
Yeah. So, and Tim, you would agree that's the game plan, is to try to avoid the situation and deflect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been our game plan.
Survival plan. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, How long would you say the reactivity, the timeline has been? Like, has it been, I know that you said it seems like it's getting worse, or at least your anxiety about the reaction's getting worse because now we actually have a bite. But do you feel like it's gotten worse, like, over time, or has he always been reactive in this scenario?
He's always been reactive. I think during the COVID times when we were, like, all at home, I think it seemed to get worse. It seemed to increase in intensity.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's, I mean, everyone's been dealing with that, of course, but okay. So now you're at a point where, okay. So, Couple things that I would just go over preliminary, and this is generalized only because obviously I can't see what's happening, but I've had a tremendous amount of experience in exactly what you're talking about. And I
we thought your videos were very helpful to us.
Yeah, like, very helpful.
Maybe this guy.
good. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad. That's why I put them out. You know, people are out there like, oh shit, what do I do? What do I do? And boom, they're like, oh, okay. So anyway, just a couple notes is, oftentimes, okay, so judging by what you're saying, let's say, and I'm just going to go off on a little thing here. We have a dog. We can bring him to a daycare with new people and with new dogs, and we let him in there. The girls or guys take him, and he's great. No problems, no incidences. You come back, he gets reactive. So obviously, there's like a protective thing going on, and that's what I'm thinking in my head. The other thing I'm thinking in my head, too, is there's definitely some resource guarding issues going on. And resource guarding is a blanket. It's not just one particular thing. It can be, but I'm more leaning towards resource guarding as a whole with this dog. So again, blanketed. It used to be with food or toys, and it also can very, very easily transition to owners, which is you guys, obviously.
Okay.
So when you go out, that could be some of the cause and some of the reason why these things are happening. So somebody walks up to you, and again, nobody really knows for sure, but again, with experience and really handling these situations the way that I have and the success that we've had, it seems to be reactivity, reaction. The dog is... So think about reaction as... I always talk about like... maybe like fire and a fuse. Together, they're a fire and a fuse, but if you put them together, there's a reaction. Something happens. So when you're out walking and then something enters the environment, the dog then explodes. And typically, again, because this isn't a dog that's going after random people or attacking people, the only circumstances this is happening is when you guys are around and something enters your mix. So then he barks and reacts, lunges. And what that typically is just say, hey, get out of here. Go away. It's a kind of puffy chest type, like, get out of here. I don't want you around. Sometimes it's because the dog is insecure with the owner. And the language that I try to tell people is the dog is basically saying, like, my owners don't know what to do. You're a threat. I love them. I'm going to protect them by doing all this scary stuff like a human would if somebody threatened them. They would go into fight or flight. They would either stand up and yell and scream and their voice would crack and they'd be nervous as heck, but they'd be trying to protect their family or whoever they love, or they would run. And obviously, and that's why a lot of leash reactivity gets so explosive is because you're trapped. You can't do anything. So the dog can't say, hey, mom, dad, let's go. Hijack it out of here. We don't know what to do. They feel the leash. They know that they're on the leash. They feel vulnerable, and then they explode. And they're like, well, I have to fight. So again, I definitely think that's some of your issue, but I don't know for sure if that's all the issue. I've also seen the other end of the spectrum. There's two other things that come down to leash reactivity pillars. First thing is the lack of just understanding of what to do. So if the dog doesn't know what to do with obedience, so inside, you know, just saying, hey, heel, leave it, sit, stay. And oftentimes the response I get from most dog owners is, oh yeah, yeah, we do all that. We've done that in puppy class. But the reality is if you can't do it in real life, none of it matters. I don't care if you've trained for 10 years with the best dog trainer, obedience dog trainer in the world. If you can't do it where it matters outside, then it's not applicable. It doesn't exist. So if you're out with your dog and you say heel, and then they lunge and they break their heel and they are jumping past you and they're growling and doing all these things, then, you know, that's a problem. So the basic obedience is a really big part of this for two reasons, is because it gives you an opportunity to give the dog an alternative task. So somebody comes to the door, you say, go to your place. He automatically has to go to his bed, and you say, stay. Now, if your place and stay are really good, and you go to the door and you take that package, it eliminates the position of the dog to think that he needs to protect you. And it also sets the dog up for success by giving him something alternatively to do. Because dogs sit around all day patiently waiting for a job. They're literally like, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing something, but I'm not, I don't really know. And they're like, oh, a walk, cool. We go out for a walk and they're like, yeah, I'm still kind of bored. Like, that was great and everything. Oh, I'll go outside. So then, like, again, think about sitting around being bored, and then ding dong, and they're like, rawr, rawr, So that kind of like compounds. And then the third pillar, I would say, shooting from the hip here with this particular case, is the ability to hold the dog accountable so they know what they're doing is wrong, so they can think clearly. So if they lunge, bark, or in your case, even bite somebody, if we're not also holding the dog accountable or correcting the dog under those circumstances at the right time, it's basic principles of psychology of like, somebody ran the stop sign. Well, did they know it was there? No. I'm like, well, you got to, how are they going to know that they did that if they ran past that guard? So that's the other really big picture that I find with people is the dog says, I'm reactive because maybe I don't like people, or I'm reactive maybe because I need to protect you. But at the end of the day, if your dog is doing something that ultimately could have them killed by biting people and, you know, causing harm, nobody wants that. And to be honest with you, from the sounds of it, your dog definitely doesn't want that. They just don't have another choice. But they also probably don't know what they're doing is wrong either if we're not correcting them. So if you're out for a walk and your dog sees somebody, ears will perk up, eyes will dilate, pupils will dilate. You might see the hackles start to go up and then they get really stiff, their mouth shuts and they're building. And so if you say, hey, look over here instead, they're like, get out of here, stop, get out. And it just makes things worse because you're basically trying to hold back a drunk guy that's really mad about the guy at the end of the bar, and it just makes it worse. And that's where your handling comes in, where you're like, we're going to do this alternatively. And then also your correction comes in to make sure that the dog knows not to do that. But if you don't have those two things, unfortunately, you'll have to deal with the reaction for a long time.
Okay.
Would you recommend us doing obedience, basic obedience training, even here at 5 years old? Or
Yeah, definitely. I think, so think about basic obedience as your communication. And so if somebody has lived for X amount of years, but their English is bad, because that's, I mean, you're really trying to get them to speak a second language. I mean, they're dogs, so they don't. So if you're like, hey, you know, you can, because your obedience, that's what I want you to think about. Your obedience is your ability to communicate with your dog. That's the only reason why we do it. Why do we put dogs through obedience school? Is because we want them to coexist with us. And when you say something, they're like, got it. I know what that is. We've practiced. So you can always start obedience with a dog because they don't, you know, there's no timeline on it.
Okay, good.
But when you're using obedience to counter behaviors that has been going on for 5 years, that's where the old saying of you can't teach a dog new tricks, because you're going to be using heel or leave it or place to counter some of these things that have been going on for 5 years, and that's going to be more difficult. But to teach a dog play, sit, and stay at this age is the same as it would be if the dog was 14 weeks old. Just to put it into perspective. So what I would, again, inject into the equation is when you're out, like what I do, I just put together a dog reactivity course, and we're working on it. And so a lot of the information I talk about, and one of the biggest things that's helped me be successful, is most dogs who are reactive don't want to be. They simply don't. They just don't know really what else to do. They just kind of freak out. There's no filters on them. And so you have to kind of pull back a little bit and also, again, think about your relationship with the dog the moment you walk out your door. So if you get your leash out, get your poop bags out, the dog is excited, we're about to go do something, and then you go out the front door and they're right in front of you and they're kind of dictating how the walk's going to go, I just want you to, if you freeze framed your walk with your dog and you asked 20 people who would be in charge in this walk, like if there's somebody in charge, if there's a leader and a follower, who would you pick? And I don't know the answer, only you do, but if the answer is like, yeah, well, my dog is in front of me sniffing everything.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, at least for me. You know, yeah. I would think both of us. They're so, in charge of the walk.
Yeah, right. So just look at that picture and really think about like, okay, so then again, like your relationship with, like your dog looks at that relationship as a binding agreement of we are together. Like you look at it as like, I'm going to go out for a walk because it's good for me. It's good for the dog. It's good for nature. It's, you know, it's a break from work. This is great. But the dog is like, we are a unit together. And so if the dog is in front all the time and dictating how everything is going to go, well, then of course, if something enters the mix, you know, if you were walking around with a toddler and somebody came up and asked for directions, you're not going to look at the toddler and go, well, answer the guy. You're going to say, oh, you take a left up here, right? You're immediately going to initiate the assertiveness to take control. So when you're out with your dog and your dog is in front of you and making decisions, and I did a post today on Instagram actually about this. It doesn't matter if your dog's in front of you. It matters that when you say, okay, dog, heel, the dog goes, yes, got it. I'm going to fall back in place and then walk at your heels until you tell me to break. So if that's something you can't do, again, like when you're out and then something enters the mix and your dog says, I got this, that's what's happening. And then you're like doing everything. You're doing like the, you know, horse and pony show to try to, you know, like circus around like, and trying to like, and that's, avoidance is okay to do if you, I mean, it's the safest thing to do if you don't know what else to do. But at the end of the day, obviously it doesn't help the dog overcome their fears. But I will say that that really compounds the reason why the dog is reactive in the first place. We go out with our dogs. Our dog's relationship is they're in charge the whole time. They make their rules. There's no boundaries or structure there. And so that also creates, that is one of the most singular reasons I've seen dogs become reactive in the first place, is exactly like I talked about. You're the toddler, they're the adult. Any situation that arises, they step up. And then we just hold them back or we just push them away. And we don't really assertively dismantle that and say, whoa. And so that's where you put the leash back on and you start really working on developing boundaries of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate behavior. And that's the way that you start teaching things to your dog. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
So
it's going to take the he really hurt somebody. She did the ER. Like, so we are more anxious about, you know, trying things with him. Like, that's going to be a little bit hard for us. I'm just gonna have to work with the obedience trainer, I guess. You know, we're going to be nervous. I'm going to be nervous about not going far off the trail. More nervous than I was, you know, a month ago.
Yeah. And I agree. Because now you got some skin in the game. It's like,
yeah, right.
You know, before it was annoying and inconvenient that we had a reactive dog. But then when something happens, you're like, okay, now this is serious.
Right.
So going back to like your, I guess, question about the obedience and stuff, like, yes, that's going to be a big piece to it because, and forgive me if any of this is redundant or you know, in all of this, but when there's a big and significant difference between obedience training and behavioral training, but oftentimes they, you know, they correlate like an athlete would correlate between playing football and basketball. It's like, okay, they can be good at both or, you know, whatever. So when you're doing obedience, obedience is your ability to communicate with your dog to essentially help them coexist with us humans, especially anybody in life. It doesn't matter how busy you are, how many kids you have or how many kids you don't have. It's just, I want you to go sit down. I want you to sit. I want you to stay, you know, for whatever reason. I want you to go to your bed. I want you to stay. I want you to walk nicely on the leash. I want you to come back when called. All of those things are only put into place to help our dog be safe and to make sure the dog can, again, coexist with us. I'm going to let you off leash at this park. When I call you, I want you to come back. That way we can have our cake and eat it too. You're going to play run ragged because that's what you love to do and chase squirrels. But when I call you, you have to come back. And if you don't, it's deadly. And same thing with other parts of obedience where I say, hey, I want you to go to your bed and I want you to downstay. Because maybe your personality doesn't allow you to be comfortable around new people. Or maybe you're a puppy or, you know, 6 months old where you're just going to be the end of the spectrum where it's like, who are you? Where are you coming from? Where are we going? What are you doing? What you got for me? Good to meet you, man. You know, or it's just like, I don't want you here. But at the end of the day, your ability, again, like, you know, like parenting is to say, you have, you know, my mom always used to say, because I said so. And now being a parent myself and obviously being an educator in the dog world, I get it, where I'm like, oh, that means it's for your own good. Just, I need you to go to your place and stay because the UPS driver's here. And if you bite this person, we're going to get sued and you're going to be put down. Yeah. So you need to go to your place. Mm-hmm. You need to down and you need to stay. So that obedience is a really big piece to this. But then when you start working on behavioral work, it just, they correlate. But if you have to have both, no matter what you do, mm-hmm. because some people can do obedience and they never have to get into behavior because it just doesn't arise. Maybe, you know, genetics or whatever. They live in a farm and they never see anybody. So you're never, you know, who cares? But you do need both. But my question to dog owners, whenever they're having behavioral issues, the first thing that you should audit and the very first thing that you should reflect on is how good is your communication and your obedience? And if it's not good or hardly there at all, which is most people, because people don't put in the training work until there's a problem, which is normal, very normal, then what ends up happening is it's like, okay, so you now have a behavioral problem, but you also don't have you don't have foundation. So now we have to work on this. We have to work on the top of the building, but you don't have stairs. So you have to build these things up in order to combat that, because you could just correct it. You could just say, leave it with whatever collar and leash you guys are comfortable with and that works for your dog, which we'll talk about in a minute. But you're missing an opportunity to help the dog also cope with the situation. And I find that having a nice blend between those is what ultimately puts the dog sustainably at success, is to just have a blend, you know. So it would be, you know, just for an example, again, like say a kid just got really excited because they saw the ball across the street and they start running and you grab him by the back of the shirt and pull him to the ground. That's a correction. You're telling, no, you're about to get hit by a car. And then, you know, and then they say that, okay, that was stressful. They're crying. But you have to understand, and I'm trying to give you guys perspective here so you can inject this into your dog. So that's the correction. The correction is supposed to be stressful. The correction is supposed to teach. The correction is very brief and momentary. It's just one quick little like, oh, one decision, you grabbing that shirt, pulling the dog or the kid back. And they're like, wah. And then the next thing you do is you teach them. You have to hold mom and dad's hand before we cross the road because it's because of these three, you know, these reasons. And so that's like a perfect blend of how I work with dogs and I work with animals is first, I want to teach you how to hold my hand when we get to crosswalks, period. I want that to be an automatic, you know, and then after that, it's going to be the communication of, well, if you do something wrong, then that aversive correction, no matter what it is, it could be yelling at a kid. It could be, again, grabbing their shirt. It could be taking away their TikTok. Whatever you're doing to cause that stress has to matter. And that's where a lot of people, a lot of dog trainers, a lot of professionals, and a lot of dog owners in the world fall short, is the correction and the enforcement that they're trying to do doesn't hit home with the particular dog. So they're like, I don't care about this because the ball is more important than TikTok or vice versa or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So when you're working with your dog, you have to take a step back and say, somebody's coming to the door. Somebody's walking. It's inevitable. You have to walk your dog. You see a person. And again, you're already going the avoidance route. And you already know that that's not working. And if it did, great. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we'd be talking if that was the case. Mm-hmm. So you're going to hit it at both angles of, I want you to heel, which means walk nicely at my heels. So technically, if you go to lunge at somebody, you're breaking your heel. So I can punish you for breaking the heel because you know that that's something that you have to stay in. So that's being disobedient. So again, like go to your room, kid goes to the room, they walk right back out. Wrong, back in. So when a dog's in a heel, or you can give the dog an alternative motive of like, hey, we're going to do this. So you get your dog's favorite toy, you get their favorite squeaker, you get their favorite treats, and you're using that to your advantage. So you go out, you say, hey, dog, heel. They start to see a person. You inside turn. The dog is going to be on your left side. you turn inside to the dog. Wherever the head of the dog goes is where the mind will then follow. So if you turn and go the other way, the dog's head is going to be looking in the opposite direction of what they're loading on. And it'll naturally just decrease that build. But you're not going home. You're just doing that for 2 seconds. And then you may stop, put the dog into a sit, pay the dog, good sit, go back into a heel. And at any moment, your dog can start growling and then bark. But once your dog is at that point, we're correcting the dog for bad behavior. You could correct the dog for not healing, but some dogs will just bark in a heel. And so my point is assertively, you would say, hey, leave it. And you'd correct the dog for dangerously going after an individual that's telling you how beautiful the day is. I mean, it's wildly dangerous for the dog to even think that that's appropriate. But again, the caveat to that is the reason why your dog is reacting that way is because you're not assertive enough. So do you see what I'm saying? So it's kind of like this, you're the problem and solution type thing. And that's just my experience over the decade I've been doing it, specifically with reactive dogs, is the dog is only reactive because they feel like you don't know what to do. So the moment you correct them for saying, hey man, what are you doing? This is crazy. You know, somebody just asked for directions, or somebody just walked by with their AirPods in and you're trying to hurt them. We're going to correct that, let the dog know that that's very inappropriate. And then the next moment, you're going to have another test. And another test is going to be the next person. And so when you say leave it, it's going to be then enforced by your correction. And whatever that correction is, we'll talk about later, that's not as important to me. It's about the fundamentals of your dog is doing something wrong. We need to very clearly say, hey, this is inappropriate. You're going to kill yourself. This behavior is deadly. So we correct the behavior with usually a verbal cue will come. So we'll say, leave it, and then immediate enforcement. It'd be like seeing a speed sign that says 40, and you go 180, and there's a cop right there. Zoop, you're immediately getting pulled over. That's what law enforcement do. That's all they do, is they enforce the laws that are set by the people. So when the dog starts to react like that, we correct the dog with a leave it. So it's immediately enforced right behind it. Now, the next dog, they say, and again, the objective, of course, is the dog is, oh, that was stressful. I didn't like that. That was an aversive consequence. That's the point. Correcting your dog for bad behavior shouldn't be a reward, because then you'd be rewarding them to do it again in the future. And obviously that would be, in my opinion, incredibly insane and also just very, very, very dangerous. So when the dog says, I'm going to lunge at this person enjoying their day, leave it, correction. And then the next opportunity, when the dog starts to build and you say, leave it, they have an opportunity to think about what they're doing. And if they make a good decision to not react, that's where the other end of the spectrum comes in with tons of positive reinforcement. Yay, good, leave it. Balls, toys, pats on the belly, treats, whatever you can do to say that was a good decision. And what ends up happening is, specifically with dogs who are insecurely reactive, likely like your dog, where they're like, I don't really want to do this anyway. What ends up happening is they're like, thank God, finally, you've taken the steering wheel from me, and I really didn't want to drive this whole time. So it's a classical operant conditioning type of theory here, is just very, very simply, this is good, this is bad. Obviously, it's more complex than that. It's more emotional than that. But the objective is as you work through these problems with your dog understands then how to behave. They're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with a truly aggressive dog who actually just wants to hurt something because they enjoy it, it's very, very rare. I mean, one out of 50 reactive dogs, or maybe it's very rare. I very rarely see it. And B, those dogs are typically not vocal at all. They just go. They just want to kill. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just what they do. You know, they'll kill anything. The squirrels, dogs, cats, they don't care. They just kill. And they're not doing it to be mean. They're just doing it because they either have a prey drive, or they've been taught to do it, or whatever. So when you get this very vocal, insecure dog, and they're like, wow, get out of here. This is my mom. She doesn't know what to do. And then, correction. You say, hey, man, stop. They go, but no, heal. Moving on. Good heal. Boom. And they're like, and then they kind of get this whole equation And it's easier said than done, obviously. I mean, when I'm saying this, you're right. Like, you know, it's not like playing a video game, but that's kind of the idea of what you guys want to do. And if you lack those pillars of not correcting a dog for bad decisions and no basic foundational training, it'll create that very unhealthy relationship where the dog is reactive only when you're attached to the leash because they feel vulnerable and they feel like they need to do that. So that's kind of like the diagnosis of what I think is going on and what you guys should be doing. Do you have any questions or comments on that?
Tim, what are you thinking?
Oh, no, that's right on the money, I think. I think he's got it. I mean, obviously, he's been doing this for 10 years. I think he's seen it, seen our situation probably 100 times or thousands of times, probably.
Yeah.
And the cases, I mean, we've never done, obviously, you know, any obedience training at all. We've not done any formal obedience training with a trainer or anything like that at all. So, you know, I think it's so long as it's not too late and sounds like it's not, then we need to start that right away, I think, to try and, you know, establish basically what he's saying here, these pillars of, you know, communication, I guess. So, cause right now I'm sure you can see it in his eyes. He doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a fearful dog. Very nervous, you know, when he's out of the house or not, you know, around other people or whatever. So
yeah,
it makes sense to me.
Yeah. And that's how you'll kind of see that behavior on their sleeve a little bit is they react because they're in fight or flight. They're attached to a person they love on a piece of rope. And they're like, this is the worst case scenario for an insecure dog. Cause they're like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. They don't want to run because they want to be with you, but they feel like you can't handle it. So the good thing is, and I'll tell you this, and I don't want you guys to feel terrible about it because you shouldn't, because a lot of people, in my experience, don't do proper training. They just don't until there's a problem. And then boom, they talk to me or they find my videos or whatever, or other people. So it's not uncommon for people to not go through training. However, it is a very big piece of the foundation when you do have behavioral problems of like, okay, what's your communication like? What does your dog know? And if it's zero, it's like, then that's where you have to start. And that's what I tell people that come in to physically work with me. As I say, if you can't heal your dog on a loose leash for 5 feet, there's no way I'm going to be able to tell the dog how to think. You know, we have nothing to work with. So finding a trainer, definitely. There's some things that you can do at home, just depending on, you know, how you guys are at home, you know, and how much time you have and what type of learners you are. I have some courses and obviously a ton of videos that kind of go over these types of things. The No Bad Dog Kickstarter course, which is the course I developed for you. It's the people I meet just like you, where they're like, okay, this makes sense. Where do we start? That course is perfect because it goes over the 5 things that you should start working on with your dog, but it doesn't just go over obedience. It goes over relationship and thresholds. And when I say relationships and thresholds, what that means is putting together very, very basic, easy to follow structure. And what that means to you and the dog is you're going to test the dog on their obedience, and obedience is obey. So when I say sit, and then I go to reach for the door, and you get up and you say, okay, I'm out of here, we have to rewind because that's a problem. We can't even walk out the door without you flipping me off. So that program and that course that I have also goes over how to start rewiring your relationship with your dog as well, not just place. It goes over place, recall, heal, create command, and stay, I believe. And it also, in the break, but it goes over in depth of not just how to do it, but why we do it, because the why is the relationship part. When you put your dog into a sit and a stay before you go out the door, it's not to be alpha or anything like that. It's just to say, I'm going to ask you to do something because I said so type thing. You need to respect me and understand that when you want, because it's a very instinctual and primal thing for a dog to see your hand go to the handle. And then the next big step or trigger is jiggling that handle. And then poof, they're like, let's go to Disney. And they forget that you exist. They forget that you even told them to sit. They don't care. They're just ready to go. And that's a problem because that same equation, copy and pasted, is going to be you're out for a walk. Your dog sees something that they want and then they fire. And so at a smaller scale, you need to practice these exercises to make sure, like a boxer practicing for a match, I'm going to go through all the shadow boxing and all the motions and or any type of practice, whatever you're practicing for or whatever you're studying for is for the real thing. And so how you can do that at a very base level is just telling your dog, I want you to stay here until I release you because I said so. And then on my terms, I'm going to say, okay, now you can be a dog. And so when you go, so A, it really helps with your dog going, oh, okay, you're starting to step up here. Okay. So you want me to listen to you now. You're in charge. And that's really helpful. So I'm just giving you like a very small picture of what I'm talking about here.
Okay.
But that'll be helpful for you guys to like kind of do homework with. And I think it's a couple hours long. So it's, you know, it's a lot more than, you know, what we're talking about here, but more in depth.
Okay. We find that on your website? Yeah. Your YouTube channel? Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty much everywhere. If you just Google Tom Davis No Bad Dogs Kickstarter course or No Bad Dogs Kickstarter course, it'll come up.
Okay.
But yeah, you kind of take it at your own pace. It's video formatted. It's with a puppy. And I originally put it together as a puppy course, but then I realized every single thing that my behavioral cases come in for are lacking what I just taught this puppy. Every single one of them.
Okay.
So I changed it to the Kickstarter course because that's where you should start for people like you, where you're like, okay, in theory, all this makes sense, but where do we start? And that's a good start outside of this conversation.
Okay.
So as far as one question I think I should go over with you guys, or one question that you'll probably have right when we get off is like, okay, how do we hold the dog accountable and how do we correct the dog? There's so many different things out there that you can use. For an example, there's slip leashes, slip collars, harnesses, prong collars, gentle leaders, you know, martingale collars, you name it, front clip harnesses, all that stuff. The only thing I really care about is what works. And over the years and over the time of working with dogs for a decade all over the world, I have a list of equipment that have been sustainably the safest and most effective tools. And because that's my, I mean, there's no other, I mean, that's my job is to give you streamlined information. So you can start off with your flat collar at home, like if you don't have anything. But if you were going to order some equipment, depending on how much does your dog weigh, do you know?
He's, we just went to the vet. He's right at 40 pounds.
Okay.
So maybe 38 or so.
What I would recommend is, and I can send this to you in an email too, if it's easier, but what I would recommend is you can start off with anything. I mean, you can use a piece of string, but you should get some training equipment that's going to be effective. The company is called Starmark. So Starmark, and they make, training collars. And there's a small and then there's a large. You guys should order two small of the Starmark plastic training. They're called plastic training collars. And what they are, it's like a prong collar, but it's plastic. And what it does, I'm just going to look it up. What it does is it distributes pressure evenly to safely correct the dog. Yeah, it's called Starmark Pro Training Collar. And there's two sizes. There's one with a Doberman and there's one with like a Pomeranian. So I always like the smaller ones. The big ones are just massive. So anyway, that's what I would recommend is a Starmark collar. You can get them off Amazon or Chewy for $7. So you can order two of them for less than $15. It'll be at your house tomorrow. If you have Amazon Prime, I'm looking at it right now. And that's a good place to start. And when you're using training equipment, I can send you over my training equipment intro as well. Via
yeah, that would be great.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, on YouTube. It's with a prong collar, but it's the same principle. It's being able to give your dog pressure safely. So if you use a flat collar, the flat collar is really only developed and invented for just like tags. Or if you have a dog that just could care less and just walks like a unicorn, you know, perfect dog, you can use that. But when you're actually training, you're going to be using something that has what we call action. So the collar actually slides in and out and adds a little bit of pressure to the dog. So a pressure and release system. And that's where I would start. And you want it, just to briefly go over this, you want it to fit right behind the dog's ears. You don't want it on the dog's throat. You don't want it on the dog's chest. That's the best way to start with that. So that's what you can start with. And inside the house, again, just start off by reestablishing your relationship with your dog, or in your case, potentially reestablish it. Not even reestablish it, just establish it. So what you would do is you would do, again, like for an example, you can do this with anything. Anything that you do throughout your day where you can test your dog is the best thing that you could do. So let's say, again, you put your dog into a sit and a stay before you go outside. The minute you reach for that door, I would confidently say that your dog's going to pop up. And your dog is going to say, okay, we're going out. And you're like, oh, well, okay. So they're basically blowing off your sit and they're selfishly saying, like, this is what I'm doing. And that's not what you want. So when you put your dog into a sit, that collar is going to hold them accountable safely. So we don't want to because if you use a harness, it's going to physically pull them back. And then once the dog actually pulls and starts reacting aggressively, the harness completely collapses, like not physically, but it doesn't work. It doesn't get the dog's attention. It's not supposed to. It's made for dogs to pull safely. So once they start pulling and reacting, it disables. So the collar, it's like putting a harness on a horse. Like if you, the saddle that you get on, it's like wrapping your reins around the saddle and expecting to control where the horse goes. It's not fundamentally ever going to work. You'd have to put it wherever makes the decisions, and that's on the dog's head. So the collar goes right behind the ears, and then you hold the dog accountable. So you say, dog, sit. They say, okay. They put their butt on the ground, and then you reach for the door. They get right back up. Boom, accountability. And at that point, your dog is going to go, oh, this is different. Because what a lot of people do is they ignore that the dog get up, they open the door, and then the dog runs through. And you got to realize, like, the dog is tracking every piece of information you give this dog because they love you and they want to know what you're going to do next. So you say sit, you go for the door, the dog gets up. So the dog already acknowledges, I only sit for 1 second. And then when I think you're going to go through the door is when I'm going to be at the door. And that's a big problem. So once you put your dog into a sit and they get up, pull your leash up, hold the dog accountable. Nope. It's just pressure back into the sit. And that will change a lot of things with you and your dog's relationship just right there. In the sit, then you maybe take one step forward. You grab the handle of the door. The dog is still in the sit. You pay the dog however you want to pay. It could be with food. It could be with verbal. It could be with praise. However you pay the dog. I particularly really prefer the just good sit. If you give a dog food, it gets them excited. They wiggle their butt. They get up. If you touch them on the head and get them excited, they get up. So I usually just play it cool. I say, good sit. And then I say, okay, break. And that's step one. I'll do it again. I'll come up. Hey, dog, sit. Dog puts the butt on the ground. I grab the door. Good sit. I pay the dog. So the dog is fundamentally understanding and following through. I'm going to stay here because you told me, regardless of what I want to do. And that's where that's what you don't have right now. Is there's no filters. As soon as the dog thinks or sees, they react. And once you actually start holding the dog accountable and you start teaching the dog that there's filters and you have to ask for permission for certain things, especially when you put them into a behavior, there's that structure. There's that boundary system. Okay, well, I got to pay attention. It's like being in school and somebody's tapping the shoulder. I got to pay attention. Stop, stop, stop. Somebody's talking. Mm-hmm. Stop. I got to pay. And that's what you don't have. Your dog right. thinks and then reacts. So, and then just fast forward. Let's say, obviously, the door is a problem. People coming over to your house, and you know, that's a problem. So then what you do is, and this is really important, because this is where a lot of people, dog owners, will fail tremendously, is, again, you put your dog, you teach your dog the place, which is a bed or an isolated area that your dog goes to on command. It's a target. On your mark. Mm-hmm. That's where that saying comes from for dog actors or animal actors. Go to your mark on sets, right? So go to your place. The dog goes there, and then you're going to start working on stay. But what you don't do, this is where everyone fails, is they barely teach the dog what place is, a very, very introductory stage, very green. And then they drop the leash, walk away, answer the door, and of course the dog is going to break that and go bark. And then you're going to get frustrated and say, well, this place shit doesn't work. You say, well, wait a minute. You just asked me how to enter the Tour de France, and I'm putting you on training wheels first. So no, you're not going to win the Tour de France. You don't know how to ride a bike. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing any of this obedience, place, heel, leave it, stay, recall, anything, you have to do it in increments. It's dogs don't see it. They break these things down, not just the big picture. You dropping the leash is one further step. You turning your back is another further step. You walking away from that place command while the leash is on the ground is another step. Adding in an external distraction at somebody at the door is another step. You know, all these things you have to go in through steps. So that's what you want to do is you would teach all these things in steps. But again, like say you wanted to work on it tonight or tomorrow. Your dog has too much freedom and not enough understanding or control or obedience to be successful. And that's okay. That's nobody's fault. You haven't started yet. You can't get mad about something the dog doesn't know how to do. So what you do is you set them up for success. And to be honest, at this point, if somebody were to come knocking on your door right now, I'd say put a leash on your dog and put him in the other room because you don't have mm-hmm. the control to safely handle this situation. And it's unrealistic and even unfair for you then to ask the dog also to do these things because they don't know how to do it yet.
Okay.
So as you build up, let's say you worked on place stay for a week, which is a good start. Then if somebody's, and you can use this for each other. If you have people that live in your house as a family, you can use them as distractions as well. So you would say place, sit, stay, or place, down, stay. And then you would hang on to the leash. And let's say Tim comes to the door and the dog goes, oh, dad, and gets off. Nope, correction, pressure, back. You have to stay here regardless of the distractions or until I say break. It's just like when we say sit. It's just like when we say down. It's just like when we let you go to the food. It's all of that. You have to wait and be patient until I release you because I'm in the driver's seat and you're not because you're making really bad decisions. So there's steps, but you got to make sure that the very small steps is you're hanging on to that leash until the dog is at a level 3. That's where my dog's at. Somebody comes to the door. She's going to bark. I'm going to say, go to your crate. She's going to go there. I'm going to say, okay, come out of your crate. Okay, now go right back in. Okay. And it's regardless of what environments are around. She can handle all of that. She's prepared. She's trained. She's prepped. She knows. So that is the crash course on, in my opinion, what's going on and the things you need to do to start becoming successful. No training is better than bad training. So if you're not prepared for something, avoid it. Put them in the other room, walk in the other direction. But as you build up and you build your repertoire of getting better, then you'll be good. And then, like I said, I'll send you the prong collar intro video, which is the same intro that you'll use for the plastic pinch collar. And I'll send you all the equipment that I think you should get to be successful. It's really just the leash, or I'm sorry, the collar and the safety clip. Safety clip basically ensures that if for whatever reason that safety clip comes apart as your dog's reacting, that you still have a hold of your dog. Because when you're using equipment, you want that backup always.
Well, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that sounds good.
Cool. Yeah, and I'll send you maybe some other videos if you haven't watched them yet on, you know, what I think would be helpful for you on YouTube.
Okay. One more question.
Sure.
What do you think we're going to mess up on first? What's going to be the hardest thing for us?
The first thing that you're going to mess up on is the way that you're communicating with your dog. So what everyone does is they grab the leash, they hold it up high, and they say, dog, sit, place. That's what everyone does. And that's not what you want to do. You want to be neutral. You want to be calm. You want to be like telling your son or daughter to go sit down to eat a sandwich and watch TV. Hey, I need you to come over here. I need you to sit. Here's your sandwich. Here's your drink. I'm going to go over here and work. So you're very neutral. I'm not overly like, hey, let's cut it. Or I'm not like, you need to come. It's dog place, good place. Dog sit, good sit. Dog stay. And then the moment the dog gets up, correction. That's where everyone fails immediately. Same thing with the leash. The leash is your lifeline to your dog. They can detect cancer and high blood pressure. They know if you're nervous or if you're insecure or if you're... So when you put that training collar on the dog attached to your leash, anytime that you put pressure on that dog, you're telling the dog information. You're telling them that they should be doing something different. I don't know if you've ever been on a horse before. You get on a horse and you pull the pressure in one direction, guess what? That horse is going to put you into a circle into that direction until you stop. So if you have a dog on a leash and a collar and you're giving them pressure, even if it's not, you know, we're not yanking on the dog, but they still feel that pressure. And you got to drop your arms and be neutral because your communication comes from your leash and your mouth.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you meeting with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. Like I said, I'll send you some follow-up stuff and just, you know, get to work and play it safe. If you feel overwhelmed or you feel whatever, just put the dog away.
All right.
All right, you guys.
Good. All right.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Bye. All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast, and the first question comes from Nico and Steph. 5-star review, awesome trainer. Thank you. Hello. Thank you for sharing so much with us. I've been using your advice with my German Shepherd, and I've made a lot of progress with him. I have a question about fitting an e-collar. I have used an educator collar with my German Shepherd before. He has a medium coat, but his fur is a bit thick around his neck, and I'm having a hard time with the collar getting proper contact. I have the longer contact points, but the only time I get consistent contact is if I put the collar so tight it makes him choke. Yeah, don't do that. Get the wingtips. Dog Trim makes wingtips. That's what you should do. Trying to see, what did you say? You have an educator? I don't know if it'll fit. It should fit your educator. That's what I would do. I'd get the wingtips that Dogtra has. It should fit your educator. And that's going to help. It has comfort pads and then it has wingtips. And that's going to be what you should do. Next one comes from R. Wood 881. Awesome work. 5-star review. Thank you. Hey, Tom, I have a dog who's reactive with some sort of with some of the training you suggested. Sorry. I have a dog who is reactive, and with some of the training you suggested to other clients, we have worked out our unwanted behaviors. My biggest question is my dog does have a bite history, and we muzzle her when we take her out in public. And as of lately, she hasn't been reacting to other triggers, and I'm wondering what a point. It's a good question. If your dog doesn't have a bite history and you've been really successful without any reactions, I think it's safe to say to go without the muzzle and just play it out. Play it safe. Play it by ear. Head on a swivel. And remember, the muzzle is to protect your dog from other people. So you have to advocate to make sure that other people aren't approaching your dog or you know, things of that nature. So yeah, I'm so happy that you're at that point. And that's my suggestion. Next one comes from JRod13. My husky GSD mix is scared of strangers. Love your content. My 7-month-old Sheba rescue Has a strong stranger danger, but great with other dogs and otherwise a fantastic dog. I've had her for about 2 months and her obedience training is going really well and listen with mild distractions. Her fear of people causes her to be skittish in new environments and will not follow my direction in that state. On walk, she will break her heel to avoid a stranger as we walk past and will bark if she feels that they are approaching her to make strong eye contact with her. Aside from improving obedience training, what other approach would you recommend? I would be doing a lot of motivation when you're out. And so when you're out with her, I would be making sure that you're heavily paying her when she makes good decisions. So when she, you know, watches somebody go by and doesn't react, heavily pay her. So you just have to spend some time desensitizing her around, these other dogs, other people, and then just getting her in the right scenario. So don't put her in a place where it's too tight, where people have to walk directly next to her. And then I would just be using a lot of confidence building exercises, use a positive reinforcement while you're out. Somebody walks by, she doesn't react. Yes, good. Pay, ball, tug, food, whatever you can do to help her be more confident. And that's really what you should be doing, is going out other than the training that you said. So just takes time. Confidence takes time for everybody, every dog, every person. So just getting her out into those successful environments and helping her through it, best thing to do. But yeah. All right, you guys, I'm out of questions. So if you're listening to this and you want me to answer it, head on over to the iTunes review chart, leave a review. If you're on Spotify listening to this, do me a solid favor and leave a review. We would appreciate it so much. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah Baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft. Made with Tencel, it's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah Baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft. Made with Tencel, it's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.